attention. Listen up. Eyes up here. Focus. This is important. There's a crisis happening at the border, in Syria, in Yemen, in Palestine. Oh, the dishes need doing. Black and brown people are being killed. Laundry is piling up. Believe women. Bills need to be paid. The environment is being destroyed. My kids, my husband, my wife, my friends need my attention. I need to call my congresspeople. I need to march. There's no time to stop. There's no time to breathe. Pause. I remember hearing the story of Mary and Martha when I was younger and learning that Mary's choice was the good or right choice, while Martha's choice was the bad or wrong choice. And because I wanted to be the good Christian girl, I acted like I understood and didn't question what I was taught, despite the fact that I was very confused. You see, I am a type 2 on the Enneagram, also known as the helper, and I was raised by a type 2 mom. For those of you unfamiliar with the Enneagram or unfamiliar what the type 2 or helper is, the Enneagram outlines 9 personality types with vices and virtues and core strivings. The core striving for the helper type is love, and we tend toward helping others in order to deserve or earn love. The Martha in this story definitely exhibits some helper traits. So I connected with Martha. I understood her. She was doing what was necessary to be a good hostess, and it was completely unfair that no one was helping her. So in my mind, the Sunday school lesson really got it wrong. Martha's choice was the good choice. And Mary's choice was, well, selfish. And if I'm completely honest, I saw Jesus as being rather arrogant. I mean, yes, he's supposed to be the Son of God and kind of a big deal, but chastising someone trying to do her best to do the work of hospitality simply because she's not sitting and listening to you, it's kind of harsh. But that is how the story is traditionally taught. Jesus chastising Martha for wanting help because Mary was right for choosing Jesus, and Martha was wrong for choosing not Jesus. Mary gave her attention to spiritual matters, while Martha gave her attention to worldly cares and worries. One right, the other wrong. In fact, commentator William Barclay goes even further to suggest that Jesus' harsh response to Martha was due to Jesus wanting quiet as he was focused on his imminent death. Martha's hustle and bustle disturbed Jesus, hence the critique. However, there is no direct indication of such an interpretation within the text itself. Another common interpretation comes from reading the story previous to this one, that of the Good Samaritan, which begins with the question, what is the greatest commandment? Jesus' response to that question, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and the second, love your neighbor as yourself, may give some context to the priorities of Mary and Martha. As David Lyle Jeffrey writes, the Lord must be loved first and always. Communing with him, being in his presence, and taking in his instruction is accordingly fundamental nourishment for the balanced Christian life. First and foremost is the attention we give to God, the divine, the great mystery. And out of that, our attention turns to other relationships. And Jesus doesn't even mention all of the doing things that need our attention. So here we move toward a clearer understanding of why Mary's choice was the better choice. However, there is still some sense of opposition between Mary and Martha. Is this opposition necessary or even intended in Jesus' response to Martha? François Bovon offers a deeper understanding of the text by examining the Greek terms used for Martha's hyper-busyness, the word perispao, and Jesus' response to her worries, the word merimnao. Bovon notes that perispao means to be pulled in all directions at once, to be absorbed, be quite busy, be distracted. And he writes, "It thus has the complementary meanings of withdrawing oneself from one reality and being absorbed by one or more other realities. It is to be seen in the perception that the surfeit of activities, understandable but disproportionate, kept Martha from experiencing what was most important at the moment." In this view, Jesus' response is less of a critique and more of a concern. "Martha, Martha, you are so anxious about too many things. It's okay. You don't have to take care of us." Bovon also offers the idea that Martha's frenzy was an attempt to alleviate loneliness through service. Here is where a primary helper trait arises. Martha's plea for help might be seen as a plea for love and attention. "See all of the things that I'm doing for you? Haven't I earned your care? Haven't I earned your love?" Bovon proposes that Jesus' response was intended to show her that love regardless of what she did. What Jesus wanted to relieve her of was not her service, but what deprived her of her joy and her radiance: fear of being left alone in her work, the impression that all the weight was on her shoulders, and the feeling that God was inactive. Martha's choice was to give her attention to a reality that pulled her away from the foremost reality that would provide her with what she was looking for. This is not unlike many of us today. Life is full of to-do lists demanding attention. I will be the first to confess that my attention is far too easily drawn away from those things that will provide me with fulfillment and energize me. The last 2 years in particular have provided far too many demands for attention that it can become paralyzing. With so many major concerns, where does one even begin to act? What if the beginning of action is pausing, listening, paying attention? Not to the news or Facebook or even the multitude of tasks demanding completion, but rather to God, the divine, the great mystery. Psychologist and meditation teacher Tara Brach gave a talk entitled "From Human Doing to Human Being," in which she quoted John O'Donohue. He says, "We're just so busy trying to manage our life that we cover over the great mystery we're involved with." Brock follows this quote by saying, "We go around in daily life, and this is why it's sometimes called trance. We're just not available. We're kind of living in a smaller cocoon with basically this monitoring in the back of our mind saying, what do I need to do next? What's going to go wrong? How do I solve this problem? that's kind of the world. That there's a lot of moments that we're inside, and it cuts us off from creativity or from a deeper kind of presence. So this is all the context. For the consciousness that reconnects us is a quality of beingness when we're not on our way somewhere else. Have you noticed how much of the time, in some way, you're on your way somewhere else? Have you? So it's being. It's the being states that allow us to reconnect with what we most cherish. And it's the hardest thing, because we have a really difficult time not doing. We, as a church body, are not immune to the temptation of busyness. After all, there are so many tasks to be done on Sunday mornings as well as throughout the week. It's so easy to give our attention to the details, even before we sufficiently discern whether or why those details are important. And sometimes we get busy attending to tasks, even important tasks, but may miss a sister or brother who steps out quietly because they don't know who to talk to. Or we may not notice the absence of someone. Or we may miss an opportunity to converse with someone we don't know or don't know well. Or we may be so focused on whatever obligations we have that we miss the fullness of meaning in a service. I am positive that I have missed all such opportunities. And it is impossible to notice and act on all of those occasions. It's also hard to know where to start. A beginning point is to take time simply to be. Now, you may be thinking, I don't have time to just be. So many things demand my attention. There's no room in my life for that. It doesn't need to take long. And there can be different ways to do it. For some, prayer, specifically centering prayer, can bring oneself into being and connection with God. For others who may have difficulty with prayer or God language, beingness and reconnection may come from meditation or mindfulness, experiencing the beauty and wonder of the natural world, or reconnecting with aspects of the self that may have gotten lost in the various roles we play. We may take 30 minutes, 5 minutes, or simply a single moment of increased awareness. And we might practice alone, or with one other person, or with many other people. In the times that I have practiced being, I've noticed that I come out of it into life in a more deliberate way and with a greater sense of peace. Yes, there are still things to do, and yes, all the concerns and struggles are still there. But there's more of a sense of possibility in addressing those issues. This week, I encourage you to practice being. In whatever way you choose. First and foremost, turn your attention to reconnect with that which is, whether you name it God, mystery, essence, or some other name. And perhaps you may hear Jesus say, "Dear one, dear one, you are anxious about many things. Those things can wait. Sit with me for a while."